Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're focusing on something really common but often misunderstood. Social anxiety disorder, or SAD.
Right.
Our sources today, clinical frameworks and research, they make it pretty clear. I mean, sure, almost everyone gets nervous sometimes, first day, big presentation. But this disorder, it's defined by something much more specific, much more intense, a pathology that can really, well, dismantle someone's life.
And that's our mission today, isn't it? To cut through the sort of casual way people talk about social anxiety.
Yeah.
And really explore the difference between just being shy, maybe introverted, and having this persistent, impairing clinical condition. We're digging for what truly defines that difference.
Okay, let's unpack this then. It seems like the absolute core, the diagnostic center, it just revolves around one huge fear. The fear of scrutiny.
Yeah.
So this intense fear of scrutiny, that's criterion A, right? The starting point.
Exactly. It has to be a marked fear or anxiety. And it's specifically about social situations where you feel exposed, where others might evaluate you.
And the sources give some really everyday examples, don't they? It's not just public speaking.
No, not at all. It could be simple interactions, like just chatting with someone new.
Or meeting unfamiliar people.
Right. Or even being observed doing basic things, eating, drinking in front of others.
Wow. Or, yes, the classic example, giving a speech.
And there's a key point for children mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That anxiety, it has to show up with their peers.
Okay. Not just with adults they don't know.
Exactly. If it's only with unfamiliar adults, that might point towards something else, developmentally speaking.
Got it. So what about that fear? What's the actual content? This is where it gets really clinical, I suppose.
It is. The person with SAD isn't just afraid of the situation itself. They're afraid of a specific outcome.
Which is?
That they'll act in a certain way or, crucially, show anxiety symptoms.
Uh-huh.
That other people will then evaluate negatively. They're terrified of being seen as anxious, weak, maybe boring.
Or even offending people. That was in the notes, too.
Yes, that's a significant one, too. Fear of offending others.
Mm.
And this often connects to very specific physical symptoms they worry about showing.
Like what? What stands out?
Well, the sources really highlight things like intense blushing. That's a classic.
Right.
Or trembling, maybe excessive sweating, stumbling over words,
yeah.
Even staring inappropriately. They're constantly monitoring themselves for these signs.
That sounds utterly exhausting, just constant vigilance.
It really is.
Yeah.
And those specific fears then drive very specific avoidance behaviors.
Okay, give us some examples. The sources mention some vivid ones.
Sure. So someone terrified of sweating might avoid shaking hands entirely.
Makes sense.
Or if they fear their hands trembling, they might avoid eating, drinking, even writing when others are around.
And didn't the notes mention something called paresis?
Yes. Shy bladder syndrome.
Oh.
The fear of urinating in a public restroom if others might be nearby. It's noted as being more common in men, actually.
So these fears get really specific and personal.
Deeply personal. And for the diagnosis, this fear response has to be consistent. It's not just an off day.
Right. Criterion C, I think. Social situations almost always provoke the fear.
Almost always. That consistency is key. And then criterion D, the situations are either avoided altogether.
Which can lead to huge life impacts, right? Like refusing to go to school or work.
Absolutely. Extensive avoidance. Or if they can't avoid it, they endure it, but with intense fear and anxiety. Dread, really.
And that avoidance, it isn't always dramatic, like running away.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
It can be very subtle. Things the sources mention, like over-preparing a speech to the point of rote memorization.
Ah, a safety behavior.
Exactly. Or deliberately diverting attention onto others in a group conversation. Limiting eye contact is another big one. Anything to reduce that feeling of being under the spotlight.
So how does a clinician draw the line? When does intense nervousness become, you know, a disorder? It seems like proportionality is key.
It is. That's criterion E. The fear or anxiety has to be judged as out of proportion to the actual threat the situation poses, considering the sociocultural context.
So basically, people with SAD tend to overestimate the chances of something bad happening and how bad it would be.
Exactly. They often catastrophize the consequences of social interactions.
Although it's important to note, right, that if someone is facing a real threat, like severe bullying.
Or absolutely. Sure. Then the anxiety isn't necessarily excessive or out of proportion.
But for SAD, we're talking about inflating the risk of everyday things, like ordering coffee.
Precisely. Or giving a quick update in a meeting. And culture matters here, too.
How so?
Well, a behavior like avoiding eye contact might seem pathologically anxious in, say, the U.S., but in other cultures, it could be a sign of respect. Clinicians have to consider that.
Makes sense. Then there's the duration and impact. How long does it need to last?
The disturbance has to be persistent. Typically, the threshold is 6 months or more. That's criterion F.
6 months. Okay. And the final piece.
Criterion G. It has to cause clinically significant distress or impairment. It has to mess up important areas of your life, work, school, relationships.
That's the real dividing line from just being shy, isn't it? The impairment.
Absolutely. If you avoid a job you want or drop out of school because of these fears, even if public speaking isn't your daily reality, that's significant impairment. It's about how it limits your life's path.
Right. But there's that specifier, isn't there? The performance only one.
Yes. Very important distinction. This is for people whose fear is strictly limited to performing or speaking in public.
So like musicians, athletes, people who give talks.
Exactly. They might have intense anxiety on stage or at the podium, but crucially, they don't fear or avoid everyday non-performance social situations. Dinner with friends, casual chats, those are fine for them.
Okay, let's talk about how this develops. The onset age really stood out to me in the sources.
It's strikingly early, isn't it? The median age of onset in the U.S. is just 13 years old.
13? Wow.
And about 3/4 of cases start between 8 and 15.
So adolescence mostly. Does it just grow out of childhood shyness?
Often. Yes. It can emerge gradually from being a very shy kid, but it can also follow a specific, really humiliating event.
Like being bullied badly.
Yes. Or something publicly embarrassing, like vomiting in class or a similar incident. Starting in adulthood is much rarer.
But it can happen.
It can, yeah. Usually triggered by a major life change demanding new social roles, like a big promotion, or maybe marrying into a very different social circle.
And the gender differences were interesting, too. Higher rates in women generally.
In the general population, yes. Odds ratios of about 1.5 to 2.2 higher for women.
But then in clinical settings, people seeking help, the rates flip or level out.
They often level out, or sometimes rates are even slightly higher for men in clinics.
Why would that be?
It likely speaks volumes about social roles and maybe stigma. It suggests that while women might experience SAD more often, men might face more barriers to admitting vulnerability or seeking help.
So they wait longer, until it's really severe.
Possibly. Or until their coping mechanisms, maybe unhealthy ones, start causing major problems.
And those coping mechanisms often differ by gender, too, according to the research.
They do seem to. Men with SAD are noted as more likely to fear dating, have other issues like oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder, and significantly use alcohol or drugs to try and manage the anxiety, self-medication.
Right. And women?
Women tend to report more types of social fears overall and have higher rates of other internalizing disorders alongside SAD, like depression or other anxiety disorders.
It's fascinating, well, maybe sobering, how these internal fears shape someone's outward appearance, too.
Absolutely. The sources describe a kind of typical presentation, maybe overly rigid posture, not making enough eye contact, speaking very softly.
Appearing maybe submissive or just unable to be assertive.
Exactly. And functionally, this obviously impacts careers. People might actively seek jobs with minimal social contact.
Unless they have that performance-only type.
Right. But outside of that specific performance context, they might still be quite isolated. And for men, the sources note potential delays in marrying or starting a family because of these difficulties.
So let's dig into the risk factors. Why do some people develop SAD? It seems like a mix of things.
It definitely is. Temperament, environment, genetics, they all play a role.
Temperamentally, what are the key traits?
High behavioral inhibition stands out, being naturally cautious or fearful in new situations from a young age. Also, high negative affectivity or neuroticism.
Okay.
Low extroversion and that core fear of negative evaluation we talked about. These traits create a sort of vulnerability.
And environment. What experiences increase the risk?
Negative social experiences are powerful. Peer victimization, so bullying, is a big one. Childhood maltreatment, too.
And there is that specific finding about discrimination.
Yes, a really important point. The research specifically links experiences of everyday ethnic discrimination and racism to higher rates of SAD among African Americans and Caribbean Blacks in the U.S.
That really highlights how external social factors contribute, not just internal disposition.
Absolutely critical. And then there's a genetic piece. It's definitely heritable.
How much so?
First-degree relatives, parents, siblings, children have a 2 to 6 times greater chance of having SAD.
Wow.
And there's a strong gene-environment interaction. For example, a child who's already high in behavioral inhibition is more vulnerable if their parents also model anxious behaviors.
Before we get to the impact, there was that cultural point, Taijin Kyofusho.
Right, in Japan and Korea. It often meets the criteria for SAD, but the focus of the fear can be quite different.
Oh, so?
Instead of primarily fearing personal humiliation, the main worry is often about making other people uncomfortable or offending them.
So worrying that their own gaze or maybe their facial expression or even body odor will distress others.
Exactly. It's a fear centered on the impact on others rather than solely on negative self-evaluation. A fascinating cultural variation.
Okay, so bringing this all together, this so what? Why is understanding these diagnostic details so crucial?
Well, first and foremost, because SAD is so often confused with just being shy. Shyness is a personality trait. It's common, sometimes even seen positively.
But it's not the same as the disorder.
Not at all. The sources emphasize that only a small minority, maybe around 12% of people who call themselves shy, actually meet the full criteria for SAD. The disorder involves that persistent impairment.
Right. And differentiating it from other disorders is important too, like panic disorder.
Key difference. Panic attacks in SAD are always triggered by social situations. They don't come out of the blue, which is characteristic of panic disorder.
Okay. And agoraphobia.
People with SAD are usually calm when they're alone. That's often not the case for agoraphobia, where the fear relates more to escape or getting help being difficult in certain places or situations, regardless of being alone or not.
What about avoidant personality disorder? They seem very similar.
They are highly comorbid, meaning they often occur together. But avoidant personality disorder, or APD, is generally seen as broader, more pervasive.
Broader.
APD involves a deep-seated negative self-concept, feeling fundamentally inadequate or inferior, a sense of not fitting in that often goes back to early childhood. SAD's focus, while potentially chronic, is often more specifically tied to the fear of negative evaluation in social or performance contexts, often linked to those specific feared symptoms.
Got it. And the long-term consequences of SAD, the functional toll?
It's significant. Higher rates of dropping out of school, lower productivity at work, lower socioeconomic status over time.
And relationships suffer, too.
Yes. Friendships are often described as less supportive, less close. It really impacts quality of life across the board.
Which makes the treatment gap statistic even more, well, shocking.
It really is perhaps the most startling fact. Despite all this distress and impairment, only about half of people with SAD in high-income countries ever seek treatment.
Only half. And when they do finally seek help, how long has it usually been?
On average, 15 to 20 years after their symptoms started.
15 to 20 years, that's a huge portion of someone's life spent struggling and avoiding.
It's an incredible delay.
Wow, that delay itself is like a hidden crisis.
And it raises a really important point, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When you consider the role of those early negative experiences, bullying, discrimination, alongside the temperamental risks, It suggests this huge delay isn't just about individual reluctance. It might also reflect a systemic issue, a failure to recognize and intervene early for a disorder that clearly has long-lasting, life-limiting effects.
So for you listening, think about that staggering delay, 15, 20 years, and the high comorbidity, especially with things like major depressive disorder. Consider how those associated features we discussed, the chronic social isolation, maybe stalled careers, how they must act like fuel on the fire, turning this long-lasting anxiety into a really entrenched, persistent barrier throughout life.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into social anxiety disorder.